Right. Well, how are you, Mr. Robbins? John.
Hello, I'm good. I met a hero of mine, Mr. Brian May from the rock band Queen, and...
What's his hair like up close?
I didn't get to touch it for long, but it felt soft.
Super. Does anyone have any other facts about Queen that they need to get off their chest before?
But, I mean, look, come on, mate, I could be here for hours with that.
Right, OK. Well, let's pray that that doesn't happen. if you have any Queen facts that you feel are pertinent to any of the stories we've discussed, do throw them in, because...
It's going to be strange, though, if they've not heard this bit on the broadcast. They'll be like, why does that guy keep likening Donald Trump to Freddie Mercury?
No, they'll just think not unreasonably that you have a very narrow frame of reference. not questioning it. Super. Are you happy in the booth? Great, then. Let's do Series 93, Programme 5 of the News Quiz.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello! And welcome to the News Quiz.
We start with something heard on Woman's Hour, read by Kathy Clugston.
Coming up on Woman's Hour, Dr. Jane Sterling, consultant dermatologist at Addenbrookes Hospital, explains how she's been advising the elite world of British cycling on vulval health, followed by how to mend a puncture.
Our thanks to Gwen Seller from the Wirral for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Angela Barnes. And opposite them, on my left, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and John Robbins. Francis, who's made a strong and stable statement?
Well, it's Theresa May's manifesto. It's what, in other elections, we would call the Conservative manifesto, but for some reason, the title of the Conservative Party seems to have been shut in a cupboard for the duration of this campaign. And they're now called Theresa May's team. I mean, they never used the word Conservative at all, so I think this was just, it said, a manifesto from Theresa May and her team, whoever they may be. Have you seen her when she sent out letters, mass mailings to people, with just a picture of herself, and it said, Theresa May, Prime Minister, at the top. And then, dear elector, you may have noticed there's an election, you are allowed to vote for me. and she's... And I saw Norman Smith, the BBC political person, after the launch, saying she's now gone peak May, which I think means she's gone peak Cruella de Vil, because, you know, since she became Prime Minister, we've had a lot of this talk of, you know, stop the saboteurs and death to the enemies of the people and all this sort of stuff. And she's now turned on the enemies of the people, who turn out to be small children and pensioners. And she's going to take away little children's... school dinners, I think, and force them to eat breakfast instead in primary schools, which I wouldn't mind personally. I'm quite keen on breakfast, a decent fry-up, but you just know it's not going to be much for breakfast. It's going to be bowls of thin gruel, and you'll have to queue up to be given your bowl of gruel. And the pensioners, she's ending the triple lock. It's only going to be a double lock on their pensions, and she's going to means test their winter fuel allowance, and she's going to make... loads of them pay more for social care, I think, particularly non-residential people who aren't in care homes but are having care at home. They're going to be stumping up quite a lot more, I think, until they're so broke they actually have to sell their house anyway. And then they are genuinely non-residential because they have no residence. So she's achieved her aim.
What do you think, Angela?
I think you've got to admire the Tory party's sort of cockiness in bringing out a manifesto that absolutely targets their core group of voters. It's like One Direction releasing an album called Teenage Girls Are Fat and Stupid. I mean, some of her politics, you know, wants to get rid of winter fuel allowance. The future's looking bleak, you know. We're all living longer. We've got to worry about these. There's so many 100-year-olds in this country now. The Queen's had to get a Moonpig account to keep up, right? We should be worrying about this stuff. And I think by the time I get to old age, it's not going to be any social care provision. It's going to be what they'll be when I get there. It'll be OAP rescue centres. That's what it'll be. It'll work like Battersea Dogs Home. You know, like this idealistic young couple will come in and they'll get shown around, you know. This is Mabel. She likes crosswords, knitting and casual racism. Why don't you take her?
How do you feel about it all, Kiri?
Oh, I'm scared. Because my parents, they love Theresa May. They care about her deeply and say things like, oh, it's like the daughter we never had.
John, how do you feel?
Well, she's not my favourite May.
John, are you about to do a monologue about the former Australian off-spinner, Tim May?
No, I met Brian May today and he's my hero, so that's... There's apparently a group of young people now called Maylennials. But Maylennials are young people who don't associate Tories. They have no memory of Thatcher. They have no sort of association of the era in the 90s where they all wore baseball caps and were sort of super dweeby. And they just think, yeah, she's all right, she'll get me a bit more money. And they've got a sort of oi, oi mentality.
So, but it's odd because at the same time as doing all this Cruella stuff, she's saying that she's leftier than thou. And so every time Corbyn says, we're going to nationalise the railways, she says, well, I'm going to be bringing in a record number of workers' rights, just you wait and see. And she's saying a lot of strange things you expect Labour to say. They were going to cap gas prices, try to out Corbyn. And the outcome of this election between two parties both saying, no, we're going to do even leftier things, is that we'll end up with a very right-wing government, which is quite surprising. But there we are, that's how it works. the very same breath as she was saying, the Labour Party will take us back to the 70s, just after saying we're going to bring back grammar schools and fox hunting. So I think
on what planet is that the priority, to bring back a blood sport? She said that her reasoning was that other forms of controlling foxes can be quite cruel. And it is true. There is a cruelty about a bullet to the head that you just avoid by tearing an animal in half with wild dogs, because that's the preferred method for anyone seeking euthanasios. Don't make it quick, make it long and on a lawn.
Yeah. I want to have to jump at least seven fences.
Yeah.
There must be bugles. Admittedly, this is the tale of St. Teresa, patron saint of quality trousers and the cold, hard stare, who this week announced her manifesto for the next 5 years. And she ascended the mountain and spoke to the multitude, saying, under my government, the meek will inherit the earth. Well, not the whole earth, but certainly that tiny bit of the earth, which will be all that's left once we've deducted the cost of looking after the meek's parents. And the Conservative manifesto was launched under the slogan, strong, stable government in the national interest. Although a more honest slogan would probably be, I hope this is what you like, because this is what you're definitely getting. The Conservatives plan to fund social care by reclaiming the costs from people's estates, described by some critics as a death tax. I'm planning to dodge this when my time comes by going to Dignitas, which I'm fairly sure counts as dying offshore. Additionally, free school lunches will be replaced by free school breakfasts. Pupils will be given the choice between a hard breakfast of toast and muesli. Or a soft breakfast of rich, nourishing gruel, followed by playtime or freedom of movement. To Wales. To Francis. Angela, who's released a big red book?
OK, so this is the official launch of the Labour manifesto. I say official launch because obviously it got leaked last week. So when Jeremy Corbyn released it this week, we had to pretend we hadn't already seen it. You know, like getting a Christmas present that you'd already found in your other half's pant drawer. And his manifesto, he's called it For the Many, Not the Few, which is, I think, almost a quote from Star Trek to Wrath of Khan. No, I didn't read it all. I didn't read the whole manifesto because I'm under a lot of pressure at the moment with box sets I've got to catch up on. And it's really long. I think I've got the gist of it. Is reprivatise rail, reprivatise water, scrap tuition fees, bring back Bake Off and take back Hong Kong, I think. Now, Theresa May called it a fantasy wish list. It's a question that needs answering. How's it going to be paid for? I do understand that. I just have a brain. I've really tried to get my head around economics. I'm 40 now and I've just got, do you know what? I'm never going to get it. In the same way that I'm never going to be able to tell if a poem is good or not, right? I'm just... just not going to... I know that they need 48 billion pounds, right, is the spending that the Labour manifesto, plus 20 quid so Jeremy Corbyn could get a new suit for polling day. I understand they're going to target high earners, and that makes sense, except, you know, high earners, a little bit of a history of avoiding the tax. So is it going to be the middle classes that are hit most? We keep getting told that the middle classes are dying out. You know, I hear that apparently in Croydon now there's only 6 breeding pairs left. So the problem is the manifesto's good, it's just the problem is Jeremy Corbyn, isn't it? Now, I like Jeremy Corbyn as a man, but he doesn't connect with voters everywhere. I know that lots of swathes of the North don't connect with Jeremy Corbyn because he's just a man from North London. You know, he thinks he connects with those people because he's seen I, Daniel Blake 3 times, and by the 3rd time, he didn't even need the subtitles. So basically, the manifesto is like a new Cliff Richard album, right, in that the fans really like it, but no one's buying it.
I got to the bit about hospital car parks, which was very exciting. As I spend most of my life in hospital car parks for one reason or another. And so that's a big breakthrough for me. Although, actually, I do get free parking at hospitals anyway, as a frequent flyer, as it were.
It sounds like you go dogging.
Yeah, a lot of that goes on in the Chelmsford area, I can assure you. Well, actually, yes, our hospital is currently out of action anyway, I think, because the North Koreans have sabotaged it. But, no, it was... It was all right, the manifesto, except we'd read it all already. I'm sure that it was leaked by sources close to the leadership. I mean, the time it leaked, they were saying this is an appalling Blairite plot. But I think it was much more in their interests to leak it themselves, because then they would say, we don't comment on leaked documents. So they couldn't really be questioned about it, because it's a leak, so we don't have to answer any questions. So they had a week to let it permeate before they then had to answer questions. You'd think by then they might have got their act together and actually have read it themselves. I mean, start thinking. But then it's very odd. I mean, you can see why it doesn't go down terribly well in certain parts of the country, because Emily Thornberry is Islington South, Jeremy Corbyn is Islington North, Diane Abbott is Hackney North, I think, or somewhere. I mean, they are all within about a square mile of one another, the Labour front bench. It is a fairly limited sort of routine, and if only they were better at putting their case across, perhaps it wouldn't matter. But as it is, it's too cruel. It's like blood sport. You can't watch it.
Who else has released a manifesto? Any others?
Oh, there's loads. Everyone's chucking them out now. The Green Party have come out with a manifesto. Had a good read of that. I like it. It's really optimistic. They've clearly not costed anything. Like, there's no numbers really mentioned. I think they're hoping that every time they pay with something for a tenner, the cashier thinks it's a 20 and gives them another tenner back. The S&P have released one, and they've got upset because they said that Labour and the Lib Dems, they're copying us. I hate that all that, you know, they're copying me, miss you copying me. I hated that in school. My primary school was a private school, and when that happened, they go, miss, they're copying me. The teacher would go, don't tell tales. And then my secondary school was a state school, and when they went, miss, they were copying me, they would say, snitches get stitches. So they said they want to invest in transport in the north of England as well, the S&P. They want to create a link between the north of England and Scotland so basically they can improve the transit of goods and stag do's and football hooligans between the two areas.
It's just a cool way of saying widen the A1, isn't it?
The Lib Dems as well, their big thing is that they want to legalise cannabis. They think it's going to create like £1 billion worth of revenue, and more people are going to be able to do fractions, eighths and quarters specifically. Plaid as well, Plaid Cymru have, I mean, for what it's worth, have released one. They've basically said that they still want tariff-free access to the EU. It's not going to happen, is it? Like, they've not got a particularly strong bargaining position. Like, no one in Europe needs rugby players or love spoons that desperately.
And also, they charge an entry fee themselves, don't they, of £6.70 every time you need to go. John, are you across all the manifestos?
Well, I just wonder, seeing as this is the BBC, is this the bit where we now talk about UKIP for half an hour in spite of them having no MPs? Wouldn't it be nice just for once for either the Tories or Labour to look at the other one's manifesto and go, do you know what, that's a bloody good idea. What? Let's just do that. Yeah, let's all do that. That's definitely good for everyone. Surely they should just go, yeah, actually, we'll legalising cannabis is quite a good idea. It'll save a lot of police time.
Do you think that'll be the policy that unites all parties? Francis, have you any favourite policies that have been leapt out of any manifestos at you this week?
Only hospital parking. I don't care about anything else.
Languidly, this is the official launch of the Labour manifesto, where they promise to abolish tuition fees and zero-hours contracts, nationalise the trains, the mail, the water and the energy companies, while bringing back a 50p tax rate. If Labour got into power and do all of these things, they would truly have built a new Jerusalem, which is surprising, given that several of them have such a problem with the existing one. Labour want to take water, gas and electricity into public ownership, although they have now realised that due to safety concerns, Diane Abbott won't be able to deliver all of them in the same van. The Liberal Democrats pledged a rent-to-own scheme in which tenants could keep paying monthly to live in their home until they finally own it after 30 years. What a fantastic idea, I'm surprised that no banks, say, or building societies have thought of that one before. Plaid Cymru manifesto pledged to protect Wales from a tidal wave, although in practice the brunt of the force would be taken by Ireland anyway. By the time it reached Aberystwyth, it would be less a tsunami, more an undulating mass of brine, flotsam and charming twinkly-eyed corpses. Picture all the interior decor of an O'Neill's, but with the atmosphere of a Wetherspoons. The SNP have accused Labour of stealing their ideas, evidence of which was seen at the launch event in Bradford, where Jeremy Corbyn turned up in a pastel skirt and declared, "You may think I'm a timid wee lassie, but I'm no fear of anyone." 2 points to Angela. John, who claims he's facing trumped-up charges?
It's our old friend, the leader of the free world and a man who provides so much material for topical BBC panel shows. It's been a slow week for Donald Trump. He's only committed 2 potentially impeachable acts. In a saga that sounds so much like The West Wing, you need to begin any description of it by saying, "Previously on Trump." It's like, well, it kind of makes you think, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? I was caught in a landslide with no escape from reality. He has fired a man for investigating a man into links with the Russians, who was then fired for his links to the Russians before leaking information to the Russians. Okay. So, Donald Trump fired James Comey, director of the FBI. He told Comey to watch his back on Twitter, because Trump is a teenage girl / drunk adult. And he said that there may be tapes. You better hope there's not tapes of our conversations. He used inverted commas on tapes, which shows that he doesn't understand what inverted commas are, because he meant tapes.
Did you see his tweets? He said, "No American president has suffered as much as I have." Apart from the ones who've been assassinated, presumably. And then he said, "I'm the victim of the biggest witch hunt in US history."
Which is
people in Salem, Massachusetts, might have something to say about that. Because cool. Jacoby is also going to testify. Is it next week? I think next Wednesday. He said he wouldn't go and do it in a closed session. He wanted to do it in public. He'd only come if it could be televised. Which is just like the summer of 73. I spent the entire summer watching the televised Watergate hearings. Gripping stuff.
It's great, isn't
it? And John Dean, who was one of Nixon's people in the White House who went to jail, he's still alive and he's very compos mentis and he's tweeting constantly about it. He keeps saying, "Ah, I remember that bit when the special counsel gets appointed. Oh, yes, when you sack the head of the FBI, I know what happens next."
Gorgeously, this is the Trump presidency, which some are predicting is about to hit the buffers, surprising those of us who thought it had passed the buffers some time ago. It ploughed through the station and was now careering down the high street, while a man with an unlikely haircut stands in the driver's cabin shouting, "Poop, poop, onwards to Moscow!" Trump has been accused of obstruction of justice after allegedly telling then-FBI head James Comey that he would like him to drop the investigation into former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Senior Republicans say that it's important not to rush to judgment on the whole affair, at least not until everyone involved has had the opportunity to come up with some really watertight lies.
Also this week, it emerged that the president had discussed classified information with Russian Ambassador Sergei Lavrov. And with the president now directly handing state secrets to the Russians, one has to feel sorry for actual Russian spies who have nothing left to do but sit on Washington Park benches feeding the ducks and doing the occasional wistful covert exchange of identical empty briefcases. Just to keep their hands in. By the way, if you're looking forward to getting rid of Trump, remember, Mike Pence will be taking over, and if you don't know who he is, then I suggest that you Google him. You may want to have a hanky ready and not in the good, usual way. 2 points. John. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Angela have 4, and Kiri and John have 5. We start round two with an extract from an article in The Telegraph.
The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are to seek damages after topless images of the Duchess appeared in Closer magazine alongside an article about the pair.
Thanks to William Walker for sending us that. Francis, who's had a healthcare hack?
Very cryptic. I think it might be the National Health Service. Which was attacked by some ransomware, malware called WannaCry, I believe, which, by an amazing coincidence, are exactly the words heard all over the country whenever Jeremy Hunt comes on telly. And I think it is named in his honour. And I did wonder for a bit if this was just some attempt to get Jeremy Hunt, someone with a grudge, I have no idea who that could be, but anyway, someone with a grudge against him thought, I know, I'll disable the health service for a few days just to get him to resign. But actually, as it turned out, it was, I think, about 230,000 computers in 150 countries were affected. So it would be quite a big length to go to just to get one back on Jeremy Hunt to disable the whole of Russia and Argentina as well. So I think it was more likely the North Koreans that did it. But Hunt was very conspicuous by his absence from the telly when it was going on. I think Theresa May or someone had told him, you know, you just stay in Cobra, in your bunker in Downing Street, but don't appear on the telly because that's not going to reassure anyone. And I think it's very, very sensible and considerate of her because actually it's counterproductive. The moment, if you allow him to appear to try and reassure the public, the rate of, you know, hypertension, blood pressure going through the roof throughout the country, and all sorts of other things, heart attacks, erectile dysfunction, the whole caboodle. But yes, it was, I think, the North Koreans, they're not 100% sure yet, but the strange thing about the ransomware was, when the computers seized up, a thing appeared on the screen saying, we've got your computer and we will, we've encrypted it, but we'll put it back right again if within 7 days you send us bitcoins to the value of $300. Which, it's not exactly Bond villain stuff, is it? It's not even Dr. Evil in Austin Powers. $300. Pathetic. And a few people actually paid it, I think. A handful of people around the world. But it'd be nice to think it was Kim Jong-un, because actually, if he is capable of doing something on that scale, it suggests that his missiles may actually work, and that's very reassuring for the North Koreans, if nobody else.
Well, I mean, most hacking is done by fat teenagers, and he's certainly got the look.
Well, no, but there was that lovely chap, Marcus, who...
Marcus Hutchins.
Hutchins, who found a kill switch. Oh,
yeah.
And he wasn't a fat teenager.
Well, he's been rewarded with a year's supply of free pizza, so things
who just
may
sat
change.
Up all night with a pizza, tinkering with this thing, and then said he accidentally found a kill switch because he bought a domain name for 30 quid or something for a DNS sinkhole, obviously... no idea what I'm talking about. there was a DNS sinkhole, and
Francis,
it meant that it stopped the worm in its tracks, if you can stop a worm in its tracks. Mr. Wiggly Worm had to curl up and die. That's how they put it in computer speak, I believe.
They didn't target the NHS specifically, did they? It's just that the NHS has a lot of vulnerable computers, so like the vulnerabilities in the NHS system just meant it spread quicker than nits at a soft play.
It's because they're still using Amstrads, aren't they?
You can't remotely hack an Amstrad. You can't use an Amstrad when it's in front of you. I don't know how you tackle a problem like that. Like, can you get spies on the ground amongst hackers? I don't know if... if you can, I suggest they use a woman, because that should throw them.
They might notice this outsider joining their group.
What's amazing about the guy who discovered the kill switch sort of in his own time, he literally turned it off and on again. But But it, as I mean, I'm a fan of like no regulation on the internet and free internet. But when stuff like this happens, you think, ah, oh, maybe we need someone in control of it all, someone we trust, like someone nice.
Claire Balding.
Balding, great shout. Yes. Just the gatekeeper. Balding, and maybe she could have like one assistant, John Inverdale, maybe. Doesn't have to be. They don't have to be BBC Sport people.
I think they might as well be.
They might as well. Yeah, get the whole team.
Jonathan
Aggers. Aggers as the gatekeeper to the internet. He wouldn't take any nonsense. Boycott there in the background. Eyes to camera. Classic.
The thought of Jeffrey Boycott using up national airtime to speak out against North Korea is a tempting one. Effervescently, this is the fallout from the NHS computer hack. Despite finding a kill switch, there were fears that the malware outbreak would lead to a zombie attack causing a global cyber apocalypse, proving that you can call it what you like, but you can't make this stuff sound remotely interesting. It seems the money that could have been used to update NHS computer systems had been diverted to fund urgent day-to-day operations, like A&E and trying to work out where all this blood on the floor's coming from. All I'm saying is our cockiness has been the source of our undoing. Look, on the bright side, though, people who sell stock photos of shadowy figures in hoodies typing green zeros and ones into laptops may have had their most profitable week of business yet. What amazes me is that the BBC wasn't affected by the worldwide hack, given that Radio 4 is basically run off a single 1983 Acorn Electron that crashes every time Melvin Bragg uses it to play Pac-Man. A game that he insists, violently, is based on his own life story. 2 points to Francis. Angela, who do you want to wake up with on the morning after?
Well, this is about the Today programme, I believe. That apparently there has been infighting at the Today programme, ladies and gentlemen, which is... We don't like to think of that, do we? Because the Today programme is such a solid staple of the BBC. It's like hearing that the Wombles have had a falling out. Like, you don't want to hear that, do you? And apparently what it is Nick Robinson, who is the newest member of the team, has apparently been a bit of an eager beaver, and he puts himself forward for all the best shifts, like the day after Brexit or the day after the... election and things like that. We don't know who exactly complained. I guess it's not John Humphreys, because he would definitely have done it on air. I think what it is, it's Nick Robinson. He's the newest to the job. He's got that new boy eager thing about him, you know. Just let him do it. That's always been... When you get the keen new person at work, I just think, well, if they're that keen, just let them do it. They're not like me, I don't think. Like, if I had a job where I had to be at work at 4 a.m, I'd quite happily let the eager person do all the work. Right? I don't know how they function on... Such little... I mean, I'm a comedian, so we sleep more than cats, so I don't know. But I've just never been the eager one in a workplace. I used to do that thing whenever I started a new job, you know, that thing where if you make your first cup of tea at a new job and you make a really bad cup of tea, so nobody ever asked you to do it again. That's what you do. I did that, although I used to be a nurse. It worked with the tea round, not the drugs round.
How serious do you think this fallout is? Do you think the gossip magazines will get hold of it?
Is anyone bothered? I mean that in a nice way. Because also, like, I get that he's grabbing the job now, but it's like 4 or 5 years before there's going to be another election, and maybe that's the time for the other people to step forward. I think they should play the long game with it. That's what I've done with all the guys that I fancy who've recently got married. I know 4 or 5 years' time I'm going to swoop in there when they're all broken and they need somewhere to live.
This is, you can get around this problem. It's, if you have a programme with more than one presenter, this is bound to happen. The successful formula is you just have someone, say, call him Miles or something, and don't have any fellow presenters, and then there'll be no argy-bargy. He'll just... his will is... well, I mean, you can see...
Should just swagger about, completely uncontested.
Reigns like a Russian czar. Actually, they came to a sticky end, didn't they, come to think of it? but actually, Nick Robinson, you said he was a sort of child... he was child-obsessive geek, politics geek, and he was a protégé of Brian Redhead, who used to present the Today programme. When Nick Robinson was still a boy in Macclesfield, he got to know Brian Redhead and said, oh, could I come and present the Today programme one day when I'm a grown-up? And Redhead used to do it with John Timpson, and they couldn't stand each other either. So there is quite a long history of this on the programme, but they just managed to semi-disguise it, not very successfully.
John, you regularly present a radio show as part of a team. Do you think it's likely that they've all come to blows?
No, I really get on with my co-presenter, Mr. Ellis James, of this parish, who's been on this show. We love each other. Very dearly.
What will you be having as your first dance?
Probably a Queen track. I didn't hear about this story because I don't read the Radio 4 gossip column, the 3pm girls. Could they fight it out in a way? Could there be like a sort of a battle royale?
Oh, like women in love in front of a fire?
Well, yes, that was exactly what I was thinking of.
Well, actually, they've got a new editor at the Today programme, and I think she may be stirring some of this up herself, because she's a former gossip columnist. When I first met her, she was a junior on Londoner's Diary on the Evening Standard. And the first time I met her, this is called Sarah Sands, a senior colleague of hers introduced me to her, this is millions of years ago, said, "You must meet Sarah Sands, our newest recruit to the gossip column. She's a very naughty girl." So she may just be making mischief. So there are all these rumours spreading around that Peston might be brought back to the Today programme. He might come back from ITV. And I'm sure that his people close to Sarah Sands will be stirring it up a bit just to see how they react. And they're not very happy about it, as I understand. At least one presenter of the Today programme, who should be nameless, said to me the other day that... Peston comes back over my dead body.
Humphreys, definitely.
And also said, you know, the only reason Peston does all that long drawling is so he gets more airtime. That's the level of comradeship that goes on in this profession.
Intravenously, this is the news that a sexism storm has been breaking out at the Today programme, where presenters have apparently complained after Nick Robinson elbowed his way into a slot on the post-election broadcast at the expense of Sarah Montague. This may be the straw that broke the camel's back for Montague, who has already had to put up with years of John Humphreys introducing her with the words, "It's 6:31 a.m, now here's something for the dads." Sarah Montague has to realise that if she wants to get on as a woman on Radio 4, she has to be called Shona and have a crisis of sexuality and a regional accent in a terrible afternoon play. Since joining the team in 2015, Nick Robinson has been muscling into more and more of Today's operations, to the point where the pips are now produced by a tuning fork being repeatedly struck against his head. This isn't the first controversy to have hit Today. John Humphreys reportedly offered his resignation last year after finding out that for 25 years, producers had been cutting his end-of-programme song. Two points to Angela. Kiri, who is the Flying Dutchman?
So this is King Willem Alexander of the Netherlands, and he has been flying on KLM Airlines for 21 years because he said he wanted a hobby that challenged him. Do Sudoku and no one has to die. But he's not really a pilot. He's a co-pilot, which we all know is not a thing. If the pilot dies, everyone dies. If the co-pilot dies, it's a plane with a dead man on it. No films about co-pilots, are there? Co-pilot is the only job that's less essential than the King of the Netherlands. Apparently, he won't fly anything bigger than the planes he flies at the moment in case of an emergency that he has to go back. What possible emergency can the King of the Netherlands have? Maybe Lib Dems get in, legalise weed, and no one wants to go to Amsterdam anymore.
Apparently, I've got a Dutch friend, and she said that apparently he's a bit of a figure of fun. Like, when he was a prince, they used to call him Prince Pills because he always had a beer in his hand. And I was like, I don't want that man flying my plane.
Is there the King of Netherlands someone that you know, Francis? He's like, well, the sort of person you bumped into
at a drinks reception. The weird thing about it was he said he'd got away with it for 21 years without anyone suspecting, because he's a co-pilot, so they don't... he doesn't get named at the start of the flight because he does the announcements. And he says, welcome aboard, your captain today will be Captain... Yidrik Mika, and so he doesn't actually have to name himself. But you think it's quite surprising that after 21 years, there's nobody still recognising his voice. I mean, I think if I got on British Airways and this voice came saying, "My pilot and I," might just about guess that something was afoot. But apparently he's so anonymous, this poor little dumpling, that
I thought it was Orville. I've just realised who it was.
who sort of, in a sense, was a co-pilot.
Morbidly, this is the news that the King of Holland has in his spare time, and one struggles to imagine what other kind of time he has. Been flying planes for the Dutch airline KLM for over 2 decades. It's nice that the King has finally gone public. Up until now, it was a secret that he'd giggle over with our own dear Queen Elizabeth II once she was back from one of her overnight haulage shifts with Eddie Stobart. King Willem said that he often goes unrecognised in Schiphol Airport whilst wearing his uniform, although, to be honest, I'd be hard-pushed to recognise the King of Holland in a lineup of 2 people. Even if one of them were wearing a T-shirt that said, King of Holland. And the other person had a T-shirt saying, I'm with the King of Holland. He's not the first royal to secretly work in the transport industry. Queen Victoria was legendary for her taxi driving, and Prince Andrew famously spent 1995 as a bollard. Two points to Kiri. John, have a listen to this.
Terrifying reworking of Midge's classic.
John, who got bored in Austria this week?
This is news that Britain's ambassador to Austria got charged by a wild boar whilst walking in the woods near Vienna. And the most remarkable thing about this story is it is not from the 17th century. He was out walking in the woods. Oh, what a life. To be an ambassador, to just walk in the woods. He was charged by a wild boar. My suspicion is he was entertaining David Cameron, and David Cameron persuaded him to go out on the pull. He described coming across 4 or 5 hulking adult boars and countless piglets. One of them attacked him, and he escaped up some... He climbed up a tree... I mean, I don't know. Miles, you must have encountered the odd angry boar on the estate.
I've encountered the odd angry boar on the news quiz.
How does one deal with a boar on the land?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've got a fairly standard sized garden.
Which 60 or 70 acres?
I don't know. I mean, I'm fairly short sighted. I can't see what it is that I can hear running around out there.
There was a hunting website as well that said that boars are more dangerous than bears, which sounds like a typo. It's definitely not right. Definitely not right, because I know what boar tastes like. They taste like expensive sausages at a country fair.
They got tusks, though, don't they? Mm. That would scare me, the tusks.
You eat round them.
Do you?
I didn't even know it happened. I don't know much about the Austrian countryside, but I think a rampaging wild boar would have certainly cheered up the opening hour of The Sound of Music.
Pigs can be quite aggressive, just normal domestic pigs. Because we used to have we kept a stray pig for about 10 years, who arrived as a little piglet. And she was just found running up the lane, this tiny piglet, and no one locally knew where she'd come from, and so I think she had fallen off the back of a lorry, literally, of other piglets. So we had to take her in, and then she got huge, and we had to fence off most of the garden and turn it into a pig paradise for her. And there was an apple tree within the pig paradise, and she used to just lie in the summer underneath it with her mouth open and to catch apples in her mouth.
You kept
sort
a
of
pig.
Doing the work of the sous chef.
Exactly. Well, I don't. Well, the odd thing is, because in her later years she got quite arthritic, and. We said to the vet once on one of his visits, well, how long do pigs live? And he said, I don't know, not many of them die of old age, to be honest.
Gosh, what an extraordinary evening. Obstreperously, this is the extraordinary story of the British ambassador to Austria who survived an attack by a wild boar in the woods near Vienna, suffering only cuts and bruises. This may seem embarrassing, but it's actually our most successful attempt to forge new trade links since Brexit. Nobody's quite sure what initially attracted the boar to the ambassador, whose nickname is Old Truffle Pockets. Of course, we have to remember that all of this is just one man's alibi for having come back from the wood with torn trousers and muddy knees. 2 points to John. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes, James Tyrrell spotted this as a rather crucial missing comma on the BBC Breakfast Facebook page. Back in work this morning or worried about your computer at home following the ransomware cyber attacks? Here are some tips on how to protect your computer system from our technology reporter, Chris Fox.
Angela.
This is from Sue Patterson, who spotted this in the Sunday Times Culture magazine. It's an article about Monty Don on Gardener's World. And it says, it's just so comforting to see someone who knows what he's doing. What is impressive is that whatever the task, his tool is always clean and beautifully maintained, not caked in dirt.
Kiri.
Andrew Greystone saw this in the rules and regulations for a ski chalet in southern France. It said, the communal area is for all, but everyone can use his private part as he wants.
John.
Mark Ponsford has spotted a tweet from Cumtaf University Health Board. This week is Obesity Awareness Week. Why not give it a go?
Thank you. Now let's take a look at the final scores. Kiri and John have 9, but this week's winners are Francis and Angela with 10. Before we leave you, here is an announcement from a trade magazine sent in by Andrew Park.
Last year, the multinational firm Osborne Clark introduced a system of agile working called Sit Anywhere, Work Anywhere. The scheme is exclusively available in its Reading office.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Angela Barnes, Kiri Pritchard-McLean and John Robbins. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Cathy Glugston. The chair script was written by Nick Doody, Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and James Kettle, with additional material by Ben Hillier, David Mays and Jenny LaVille. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.